If you own a business or run an organization, consider using IPR as part of your marketing strategy. Let us show you how to reach our loyal radio audience, advertise on our digital platforms, and even sponsor your favorite podcast. Spread the word about your business and support IPR at the same time. It's a win-win. Learn more at iowapublicradio.org/sponsors.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, historian Kevin Mason is going to spend his summer retracing the 1835 route of the Iowa Dragoons up the Des Moines River so he can write a comparative environmental history of the state. I'll talk with him. But before we revisit the past, we're going to talk about a grim and satirical vision of the future. The novel, Made for Love, is now a television series on HBO. It tells the story of Hazel Green, a woman trying to leave her husband, who's an eccentric high-tech billionaire. He has, without her knowledge or consent, had a chip implanted in her brain, which allows him to access all of her senses and thoughts. The book was written by Alyssa Nutting, an assistant professor of English at Grinnell College. She and her husband, author Dean Bakopoulos, have collaborated on the television series, and together they will be here in a few minutes. But first, we're going to listen back to part of the conversation I had with Alyssa Nutting back when the book was published in 2017. Alyssa, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And I have to say that when I started reading the book, I had very few expectations going in other than looking at this cover, which there's a beach scene, there are dolphins off in the distance. We learn more about why they're there later. But were you in any way trying to trick your readers into picking this up?
My editor told me that for the cover, they had found this airbrush T-shirt artist in Florida. And my first thought was make sure that we get two red Solo cups right in there. Like I just wanted the excitement of the red Solo cup, airbrush T-shirt. but then I immediately had this sort of, panic attack of is it going to read ironic, right, or genuine? And yes, I mean, I think that it does walk that tightrope, definitely. But there is a little something delightful and sad both about airbrush T-shirts, if only just because, they can't last, so there is sort of this, inherent tragedy that I hope translates also.
The main character in your book is Hazel, and she's a woman who is in a crisis in her life. A marriage is ending. It's a lot more complicated than that. But as we get to know her, maybe you could start off by reading a little bit so we get to know. It's a little bit of her backstory, a little bit of Hazel as she was growing up, but I think it gives us a real feel for who this woman is.
Sure. She began remembering how often she'd wanted to scream when lining up for the bus at elementary school because everything felt so artificial. No one was okay, but it was not okay to say that. There they were, ages 5 to 10, most of them in brightly colored clothing with cartoon backpacks that seemed designed for a utopia in an almost mean way. They were all emotional messes, especially Hazel. By the age of 9, Hazel sometimes had a fantasy daydream at school where the teacher walked into the classroom and yelled, "Isn't everything horrible? Doesn't the pain of the world outweigh the joy by trillions? Would you like to push all of the desks into the center of the room and burn them in a giant bonfire? Then we can run around screaming and weeping amidst the smoke in a truthful parade of our human condition. Since you are small-statured, children, it might help others to feel the full brunt of your agitation if you wave sticks and shrubbery over your heads all the while. We don't want to kill anything we don't have to kill. Everything living that we've ever seen or known will die without our intervention, ourselves included. This is a psychological lead blanket that even our most pervasive moments of comfort cannot crawl out from under, and one unextinguishable source of despair, so we won't be performing any ritualistic sacrifices. That's not the direction we will go in just yet. However, Assistant Principal Lawrence is on the prowl for a road carcass we might be able to use as a representative prop, because nowhere in our autumn-themed poster board decor is morbidity or decay symbolized. Our school board members cannot agree on how best to acknowledge the boundlessness of human cruelty. In our society, some of you are far safer and more advantaged than others. At home, some of you are far more loved. Some of you will find that concepts like fairness and justice will be thin, flickering holograms on the periphery of your lives. Oh, look, children, I see Mr. Lawrence in the distance dragging a portion of a highway slaughtered deer. Let's go help him lug it inside and be reminded that we, too, inhabit bodies made of meat-wrapped bones. Let's meditate on this corporeal terror. Whenever her mother had asked, Hazel always told her, "School is great."
That's Alyssa Nutting reading from her novel, Made for Love. So that introduces us to Hazel. It's safe to say she's not a happy woman. She didn't have a happy childhood.
Correct.
And things are pretty dark inside Hazel's mind and life. But there's the story begins as she's leaving her marriage. And we flash back to the beginning of the relationship that led to her marriage. And that meeting is really reminiscent of a recent novel that sold a lot of books, which was 50 Shades of Grey.
Correct.
So Hazel is this college student. She meets with a tech billionaire, and he is very taken with her and wants to start a relationship with her. That had to be intentional.
Yeah, I mean, that book was just everywhere, you know, I read sections of it, and I'm just thinking, you know, if you are kind of this nobody, right, that this, you know, billionaire plucks, right, for marriage, he's not just going to want to, like, give you endless orgasms all day, right? It's going to come with a really heavy price. He is going to want things from you that probably, right, are going to challenge and compromise your sense of self.
Yeah, and 50 Shades of Grey turns into something of a fairy tale. This is not a fairy tale. So
that's a safe description. Right? Yeah, not a fairy tale.
But I found myself thinking that this was a much more accurate description of a relationship with a balance of power that is so out of whack because her husband, Byron, holds all the power. Tell us a little bit about him.
He's like a really, really, really evil sort of Steve Jobs-ish character. So he has founded this corporation, Google, that is kind of in charge of all of the devices that people are on and use most. And his kind of next big idea, the next thing he wants to launch, is a meld, essentially. He wants to place a microchip in Hazel's brain and use their sort of love and their relationship to help sell this this new technology to the public. And so it would mean that he would have access to all of her thoughts at all times, but she would not have access to his. It would be a one-way gate.
Where this relationship is, obviously, there's science fiction involved, or at least it's still science fiction today, maybe not tomorrow.
Right.
But it also really followed sort of the textbook example of an abusive relationship. Was that your goal?
Yeah, I mean, I think that so often, you know, relationships, you know, where in the beginning, right, things seem a little too good to be true, right? It's hard. It's hard not to get swept into that. And I think oftentimes it is abuse is so incremental. Absolutely. And, you know, it's only after, I mean, I, you know, my first marriage, I mean, I just, like every mistake you could make, right? I really tried to hit all of the bases super hard, like tore it up, right? And I began to realize how essential privacy actually is to successful relationships, which seems a little counterintuitive in terms of fairy tales, right? In terms of sort of like this, the romance that we're sold of you have to be able to give all of yourself right to your other person. You're supposed to live solely for them. You know, they're sort of as you know, completely intertwined as you can be, right? That's sort of like this ideal state of love, you know, but that's actually not a great way to live. And having your partner be able to read your thoughts would not, I don't believe, be very conducive to two people ever being able to live anywhere together in any way.
Now, of course, we don't have chips that allow other people to read our thoughts, but we give up so much of our privacy today. So we all, almost all of us, carry around, you know, these devices with us that are GPS enabled. A lot of us are posting on social media, hey, I'm here. This is where I am now. This is where I'm going next. And also, when you're in a relationship with somebody, you can enable their phone to know where your phone is all the time. So while this is science fiction, it's pretty close to reality.
It is pretty close to reality. And I mean, especially I love convenience. Like, I love convenient things. I mainly eat out of vending machines. Like, you know, I'm not a healthy person. And I would totally, if I could implant something where I had, I hate calling on the phone to order pizza, like online orders. I mean, it's incredible to me, right, that I do not have to verbalize anything and a pizza will show up. But if I could put a button in my arm, you know, and the sad thing is, like, I mean this, you know, I really mean this. If I could put a button in my arm that I could press and a pizza would show up, I would do it, right?
And a lot of people would.
Yeah, I mean, I sure would. You know, like, I would put the internet in my head. You know, I mean, there are all of these things that that I know. And that's one of the things that really fascinates me, not only about technology, but also in some ways about unhealthy relationships, right, of which I totally in the past have been in. You know, like, so often, like, we know the arguments against, right? We know the warning signs. You know, we can know these sort of dangers on the horizon, right? But this, like, immediacy of feeling good, it can be so seductive to just be taken care of in the moment.
Alyssa Nutting, the author of Made for Love, which is now a series on HBO. After the break, I'll talk about adapting this book for television with Nutting and her collaborator and spouse, author Dean Bacopoulos. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The 2017 novel Made for Love by Alyssa Nutting is now a series on HBO. The series, like the novel, is about a woman, Hazel Green, trying to leave her husband, an eccentric high-tech billionaire who, without her knowledge or consent, has had a chip implanted in her brain, which allows him to access all of her senses and thoughts. Here's how the series begins.
Love. It's the center of our lives, but our lives have changed. The world has evolved around us. I should know. I'm Byron Gogol, and at Gogol Tech, we evolve communication. We've created your phones, your computers, your software, and now it's time for love to evolve too. Now you and your loved one can truly come together. Every thought, every feeling, shared. Your brain's fully connected. A network of two. We made it possible because you were made for love.
Super creepy. Alyssa Nutting, who wrote the novel and is writing and executive producing the series, is also an assistant professor at Grinnell College, is on the line from Los Angeles. Hello, Alyssa.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, welcome back to the show. We also have with us today Dean Bacopoulos. He is also a novelist and writer and executive producer of Made for Love, also an assistant professor at Grinnell College. And I do feel the need to mention also spouse of Alyssa. He is also on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Dean.
Hey, good morning, Charity.
Well, thank you both for being here, and congratulations on the series. Alyssa, taking these characters from your novel and writing them into a series, which, of course, has to be so different from the novel, can you tell me a little bit about what that process has been like for you?
Sure. The novel's very internal. So, you know, I feel like that's kind of, for me, one of the magic spaces of books and novels is the way that we can, you know, have that kind of interiority and really quite literally be like a chip inside the characters' brains. So in taking it to a visual medium, I knew that I would definitely want to expand the world, expand the characters. And it's kind of interesting, you know, I feel like in relationships, oftentimes we sort of move slowly from fantasy into reality. And as we do that, hopefully this, this love kind of transforms and changes and kind of goes from this new, exciting, but unsustainable thing, you know, into something more real and lasting. And in a way, I really felt like that's kind of what I had to do with each character in taking it, you know, kind of from the book onto the screen. I had to sort of deepen them. I had to humanize a lot of the characters outside of the main protagonist more, you know, who were just kind of more sources of conflict or simple villains in the novel, and really try to empathize with them and see them kind of for who they really are in all their flaws and positive traits as well.
It struck me, I was thinking about this process, and you know, there's this huge world of fan fiction that has been created because of the internet. And it struck me that in a way, you're almost writing fan fiction about your novel. Does it feel like that at all?
Oh, I love that. I think that's such a wonderful, wonderful comparison. It's nice, and in a lot of ways it really is kind of a dream project, because I feel like whenever you finish one thing, you know, in some ways you feel like, okay, you know, this has reached its point of completion as it is. But on the other hand, you really kind of just started to get to know it in a way. There's, you know, kind of all of these questions and thoughts and themes and ideas that I think you have, you know, during the editing process and after kind of publication, you know, as you're sort of doing talks and interviews and continuing to kind of, you know, meditate and really excavate sort of everything you put into a book. A lot of it sometimes even maybe subconscious or something that really doesn't strike you until you're talking with readers or getting these external points of view on it. So it was really nice to have this opportunity to continue that conversation and make this kind of companion piece to the book.
Well, and Dean, when you're writing for the show, you're manipulating characters created by Alyssa. That doesn't sound like a low pressure kind of situation. What is that like?
I mean, I was involved mostly in the early stages of drafting. So it was kind of the fun part of the TV writing process, where you're throwing a lot of ideas in the air and seeing what sticks. So what I tried to focus on is like, what you just need a bigger cast of characters when you're adapting a book. And I love Alyssa's sentences so much. I mean, her writing, there's nobody in the world that writes a sentence like her. You can read a paragraph and know it's an Alyssa Nutting paragraph. So I knew the style and tone and the vision of the show would have to come from her and her brain. And I just wanted to, like, you know, throw out ideas and play that role, which is what I love about TV writing is, hey, how about a character who handles security? What would that look like? Or, you know, just kind of coming up with that brainstorming, because the show, as people are seeing it and enjoying it, is very much from the mind of Alyssa Nutting. There's a ton of names at the end, but the writer who was there from day one of Byron Gogol and Hazel Green was Alyssa. So it was really just a fun collaboration for me to mess around with someone else's world and just throw ideas out there, but not being responsible for that final performance, I guess.
Well, also,
so I had a great time.
The two of you are hopefully in a very healthy, happy marriage, and you're writing about this marriage that is so deeply flawed in every way possible. What is that dynamic like? Alyssa, I'll let you go first on that.
I mean, I think that one of kind of the major themes of the show is really starting over and also kind of relearning at every point kind of who your partner is, and also some of the dangers, you know, that can happen when there isn't that honesty or that transparency. You know, one of the amazing things I think about Kristen Milioti's performance is when she's in the hub, you know, she's acting externally a certain way, you know, to her husband, to sort of the guests that they entertain. But inside, you have to realize she's feeling very, very different, you know, than kind of this act that she's putting on. You know, so I think kind of one nice thing is just that sort of reminder that so often in the short term, kind of you know, going along with something, being kind of people pleasing, you know, doing things kind of that you might not want to do or have resentment over, but would make your spouse happy. Just sort of that there's a long-term price tag that comes with that sort of also will need to be negotiated at some point down the line if a balance isn't achieved. So I think in a lot of ways it definitely kind of was a nice reminder, you know, just of transparency and what are the ways that, you know, certainly not to this extent, but, you know, are there small areas where either one of us aren't being authentic with the other, or, you know, are kind of pretending in a way that, you know, that might add up to something troublesome down the line.
Dean, you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think just, you know, writing a television show, especially in a pandemic, when Alyssa finished producing it in the pandemic, is a stressful experience. Writing a television show with your spouse is definitely stressful. And then, you know, writing a television show about a dysfunctional marriage can be incredibly stressful. I think it made us ask a lot of good questions. I mean, it actually was a real challenging time for us. I think at some points it was just the stress of it, the pressure of it, the fact that I was in Iowa half the time in a pandemic and couldn't fly to LA. I mean, there was some real pressures on us. And I think one of the things I love about writing, you know, anything fictive, is you create these characters, or you're helping to create these characters, and you start to see some of the flaws in yourself. So, you know, Alyssa and I really had an intense beginning to our relationship. And I think there were moments where we're writing the character of Byron, and I'm like, wow, I'm a little too obsessed with my spouse, you know. And I think the distance that we started to learn was necessary. It wasn't always easy. There was some, definitely some moments in the making of the show where we were asking questions of our characters, and then you go home from the writer's room and you kind of didn't want to talk because you knew those questions were hovering above you as well. So I think all good fiction, even when it's really heightened reality or satirized or over the top, is going to make you look at your own reality. So I think it was a really good but challenging, very challenging process at times for us.
Well, and it's funny that you mention Byron Gogol, who in the book, we didn't get to know him very well in the book, and he was really, really evil. And in this series, I he's still pretty darn evil, but I have a little more empathy for him. I feel badly for him because he is so lost, and he doesn't know how to be a normal, loving, human being. And that said, he's done a lot of horrible, horrible things. But I mean, Alyssa, that goes back to what you were saying, is that you need to empathize with these characters that maybe were a little more black and white in the novel.
Absolutely. And part of this, I also have to call out Billy Magnuson's incredible performance and everything that he brought to the character. Really kind of, you know, thinking about what are ways, not only kind of with Byron, but also with Hazel, with Herbert, with a lot of the other characters, there are times where they're making decisions that maybe we don't approve of, but we did always want there to be this stem of understanding and knowing where that motivation is coming from, kind of what sort of are the thoughts and the impulses behind it. And I think it's a much more kind of human and a more realistic portrait of not only Byron, but all of the characters kind of at the end of the day have this quandary in common of, you know, how am I going to be loved, you know, in this kind of imperfect world, in these imperfect situations, how, you know, what kind of, you know, compromises or what kind of shortcuts, you know, am I going to take to try to feel like these needs are getting met, or to try to protect those needs. So really kind of seeing that, you know, even though certainly he takes that, you know, fear of rejection or abandonment or, you know, being left by his wife to the extreme with putting a surveillance chip inside of her brain, you know, we also kind of get that impulse, you know, in our own lives and in smaller ways of, you know, oh, maybe I'll, you know, check my spouse's text messages or, you know, like glance at their email. You know, I think we can all sort of understand this impulse to, you know, to sort of watch this person that, you know, means so much to you and worry that, you know, maybe they are, you know, feeling differently.
You mentioned Billy Magnuson, who's playing Byron Gogol. You mentioned Kristen Milioti, who's playing Hazel Green, and she just does such a fantastic job playing that character. And I was a fan of hers from the series How I Met Your Mother a few years ago. Mm. And then you've also got Ray Romano, who is really cast against type. He is Hazel's father, who's in a serious committed relationship with a sex doll, and just really incredible casting. I can imagine there's a lot of tension and nerves about seeing your characters come alive on screen. Alyssa, I can imagine you must be just thrilled with the people who've come into this project.
It was really such an incredible cast, and not only, I mean, before COVID even, but definitely kind of we had to shut down for a few months during the pandemic. There was kind of this touch and go period where we just didn't know how long things were going to go on, sort of what, you know, the future of production would look like. Were we going to be able to finish filming? And when we all came back, you know, there was just kind of this gratitude, and you know the characters that had actually Billy and Kristen and Billy and Ray had worked together on other projects, so there was just kind of this sense of family that made it really really a fantastic experience, but also the trust, you know, kind of level that was there was fantastic. And they really, you know, every single one of them kind of brought, you know, an incredibly layered performance and really influenced our writing. Even there were many times kind of when, you know, like after seeing the way that they would do one scene, we would go back and rewrite another. And over kind of the shutdown that we had, you know, because of COVID, we were actually able to go back and do a lot of revision that was really performance-based, you know, and tailored to the way that these talented actors were approaching each character. So it was definitely a very lucky thing.
We only have a minute left. There are going to be 10 episodes. There are 10 episodes. They just haven't all been released yet on HBO Max.
There are eight. I'm sorry. Yeah, there are eight. There were 10.
Okay. All right. So eight episodes. What do you know about the future of the series?
Well, tomorrow, the last two episodes drop, 7 and 8 drop, and we're very hopeful that that there'll be a season two. So we're waiting with crossed fingers.
All right. Well, I have thoroughly been enjoying the series. Alyssa Nutting, congratulations, and thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Charity.
And Dean Bacopoulos, congratulations to you, and thank you.
Thanks, Charity. Have a good one.
Alyssa Nutting and Dean Bacopoulos, they are writing and executive producing the HBO series Made for Love, which is based on Alyssa Nutting's 2017 novel, Made for Love. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with historian Kevin Mason. He's going to be doing a whole lot of walking this summer. We'll find out more in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.